Blog Talk Radio.
The tragic murder of 17-year-old Trayvon Martin rips at the core of America's deeply embedded problem, a race problem eroding at the heart of America's social infrastructure. As we reflect on the 44th anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King's assassination, why is race such a potent factor in how we make decisions, how people get arrested, and who gets murdered in this country? I have special guests today, including Ed Premu, who is an audio and video forensic expert, recently featured on Al Sharpton's television program on MSNBC. Ed's analyzed the 9/11 tapes and captured the screams during the February 2012 Trayvon Martin shooting. His analysis finds that the screams did not belong to the shooter, George Zimmerman. This is Carol Copeland-Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello and welcome to the show. This is Carol Copeland-Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment, a rather sobering show today, one that I just didn't want to broadcast but needed to get the facts out there. We're also hoping that our second guest will join us, Mona Lisa Smith, and she can dial in, and you can also dial in at 646-727-2766. Let me repeat that number, and that's a number that you could call as well if you'd like to listen to the program on your cell phone or on your landline, 646-727-2766. We're also glad for those who have joined us in the chat room, and we're going to be led by our first speaker in just a few minutes. I want to just give a couple of announcements. We're excited about what's taking place with the Multicultural Symposium Series, with the webinars that started last month that will continue for the rest of the year. You can find out all the information and the details about the webinar series and become a member of the Multicultural Symposium Series by going to our website, www.mssconnect.com. MSSConnect.com. Also, we're excited because we're going to give all the details starting next week about the 2013 cruise that we're running with the Multicultural Symposium Series, a Caribbean cruise with cultural elements that will just knock your socks off. Dr. Ada McKenzie, who is a leading expert now on Caribbean culture, will be on board to have lectures and giving lots of insight about the places where we're going to stop on this fabulous cruise. So we're going to begin to give information about that starting next week here on the radio show and also on the website. That cruise will take place on April 13th through the 20th, 2013. So mark your calendars and you can start getting ready for the cruise of a lifetime. It's all about multiculturalism, diversity, and inclusion. And you can always go to my other website, www.tellcarol.com, tellcarol.com, and find out more about the ways that you can become involved as a diversity professional. Well, I'm going to bring my first guest on, and I'm going to just open the line for the second person that I see on the line. I'm not sure if Mona Lisa Smith. Mona Lisa, are you with us?
No, but I'm here, Carol.
Okay, great. We'll bring our first guest on, and he's a leading expert, and I've had the privilege of knowing him through the National Speakers Association for more than 15 years. He has been just a leading authority in terms of audio production and video production, and now an audio and video forensic expert from Rochester, Michigan. I'm from Detroit, Michigan, and he's not that far from the Detroit area. Ed Premu, who was also on Al Sharpton's MSNBC program earlier this week. Ed, thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Well, it's a pleasure, Carol. Thank you.
I wanted to talk with you because we're following this story. We have a very tragic situation with a 17-year-old in Sampson, Florida, walking from the store, going back to the home of his father's girlfriend, gets into some kind of altercation with George Zimmerman. A gun was fired. There were 911 calls that were made. We hear screams that took place, and the rest is history in terms of one tragic death, one person who has not been arrested, and a very agitated and angry nation over what has taken place. So, Ed, walk us through the analysis that you have done with the 911 tape and what it revealed to us. What it revealed to you, first of all, and then what you are now reporting on lots of news organizations across the United States.
Sure, Carol. Let me first comment that the case first came to me by a fellow blogger out on the West Coast and asked me, because the 911 calls had just been released, asked me to listen to them and let him know if I was hearing anything unusual. And that's what a audio forensic expert does. In this particular case, one of our sciences was involved, voice identification. But even more importantly are a lot of clues about these recordings that I would present if I were the expert named in this case. I would present these to the legal team.
Mm-hmm.
And as being part of the legal team, some of the clues that I found involved the fact that the voice that's screaming for help in the back of the woman's 911 call, you can hear in the background, I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar with that, that's the same one we hear the gunshot on.
Right.
Is not the voice of George Zimmerman, and here's how I know that.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been listening to audio for almost 30 years, and as an audio engineer, much of my jobs in the early days included recording radio commercials and doing different type of narratives, and a lot of times what would happen is clients would change their mind and revise their scripts, and these voice talent used to come back into the studio, and they would have to re-record sections, and as an audio engineer, I'd have to match volume and help direct them so that their voices matched when they would do a continuation so it would sound seamless.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how I got my start. I had a case come in shortly right after I began my engineering career from the FBI, and they needed help doing some restoration on some audio recordings. And so I began working as an expert along those lines, and that's I say that to support this next statement I'm about to make. The two calls that jumped out at me was first George Zimmerman's call, because that's a sample of his voice.
Right.
And it's kind of like being a piano tuner, I guess, in a sense, to where you start as an expert, you start to realize characteristics in people's speech. You notice different types of accents and tone and manner of speaking and rhythm. And everybody's voice is different. It's like a symphony.
Sure.
And I heard George's voice a few times, and then I listened to the screams behind the woman calling into 911, and I immediately
we're talking
knew.
About the neighbor who called in, and
yes.
She heard this altercation right outside her window, and then she called the police, called 911. Yes.
And I knew immediately that it wasn't the person screaming wasn't George Zimmerman, and I didn't really think anything of it because to me it was almost common sense, and maybe I was being a bit naive at the point, but I knew that, and I wrote back to the blogger, and I told him then, and he said, well, this is very, very important, and here's why. And I hadn't been following the case up to that point, other than I knew it happened. And I think the reason why it got attention is because some groups acted out in protest. And here's the big part to me. The man's not been arrested.
Right.
You know, that blows my mind. And, you know, I'm not going to get emotionally involved in this because it's the job of an expert witness to stay as far away from the emotional elements that could help sway a decision. And I've been staying very neutral here. But, you know, here we are. It's now Thursday, and this started Sunday when the Orlando Sentinel released an interview that I did last Thursday with them saying that I believe that the recordings weren't that of George Zimmerman, the screams, excuse me. And here we are with a new attorney for the defense, a new prosecutor involved in the case, and these are just a couple facts that have come out with the different interviews that I've done that I know about,
mm-hmm.
and the man still hasn't been arrested.
Right, right.
So
that's how you got involved in this. And, again, obviously now your tapes are being played on CNN and lots of other news organizations, probably not just here in the United States, but certainly this has received global attention, worldwide attention. And as you have said, the gentleman still has not been arrested. How does, from your perspective, and again, you're an expert witness. There was another expert witness, an audio specialist who was on the Al Sharpton show on MSNBC along with you, and you both agreed that the screams did not come from George Zimmerman.
Yes.
What additional information from your perspective, and again, you've got to be neutral, I understand that, has to take place before an arrest can happen? I mean, I think all of us are the most, the critical thing, certainly what I'm hearing from the family and other people, is that we just want this man arrested, and then a trial will take place so that all of the evidence can be presented and then justice can be served. Whether the person is convicted or not convicted, at least a trial can take place.
Yeah.
Is this highly unusual from the court work that you have actually done?
I've never seen anything like this in my life. As a matter of fact, I've commented to clients and wrote in my blog posts that I'm believing we've become a society of guilty until proven innocent. Many of the cases I work on, the way that they're presented in court is just like that. Okay, you're guilty. Now show me why you're innocent. And in a lot of the cases I work on, that's the attitude I feel from the team that I'm on, the litigation team. And I work for both sides. I work for prosecution,
and
I work for cities, different governments, as well as private individuals and defendants.
Right.
And when you see that, you have to take a look at the sequence and the series of events that happened here. And just to name a couple things, and all of this is just my opinion, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, first of all, apparently Mr. Zimmerman's father is an ex-judge who is here. And this man walks into the police station in handcuffs, and he leaves a short while later with his gun and with his clothes and with everything else. So you got to wonder if some strings were pulled there.
Right.
I think another thing that's kind of interesting is the fact that a lot of time has passed, and there's been some changing of the guards. And I'm speaking very general here with regard to different people coming into the case and different people leaving.
Sure. And you also have, you have changes that have taken place with the police department in Sanford. The actual case now is being handled by the state authorities and the FBI. So you have all these kind of dynamics that have taken place in more than a month's time when this case actually started in February.
Absolutely. And it just, it's not right because he, you know, it just, let's give him the benefit of the doubt here for a minute. Let's say he was in fear of his life, and let's say that is him screaming on there. And let's say that he did call 911 with the intent on getting police help in a very calm tone. It's factual from my perspective that his vocal tone went from mild and calm to aggressive and uncooperative. He started the conversation out by calling in and saying there was a suspicious character. He right away he says, "I think he's black." No, I'm pretty sure he's solid. He says, "Yes, he's black." And then the next thing that you hear is that these assholes always get away with things. Excuse my French, but I'm quoting.
I understand. Yes.
I'm quoting a line here, and I'll be very careful with the rest of my description, and then he describes to the operators where he's located so that the police can find him, and they're just moments away at this point.
Right.
If we were to do a timeline, they're moments away from the site at this point. And then he says something under his voice, and we're going to just say he says something under his voice because there's a debate on whether or not what I'm hearing is actually what he mumbles. But he's still mumbling something, which is alludes to where his psychological state was drifting to.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can hear the phone bouncing in the wind, which indicates that he's running. And the 911 dispatch says, you're not going after him, are you? And he says, yes. And they say, we don't need you to do that.
Correct, right.
And then he says, okay, which leads the other person on the phone to believe, okay, I'm not going to chase him. I'm going to wait for you.
Right.
But
which he doesn't do. He just goes on and pursues him, and the rest we know.
Well, but it's just not that he pursues him. There's an altercation, and he doesn't shoot to maim. And this is something that occurred to me the other day, day before yesterday, is he could have shot Trayvon in the leg.
Correct.
You know, even self-defense instructors talk about and teach ways that you can maim somebody by kicking them in the shin or poking
right.
them in the eye. And there's a lot of things that could have been done
other than
shooting him to kill him right in the chest. And that
right.
is a very significant part of, from an audio perspective, looking at the beginning of where his voice tone was all the way to the shooting. And how his mood changed, and there's a lot of arguments that can be taken into the courtroom around that, which is exactly where this case needs to go, is into the courtroom now, because the media has really escalated all of the events, and I think that's what's got the ramification on the rest of our country. And it's
right.
It's actually,
well, it's not only the media. It's the now we have rallies taking place all over the United States. I'm a part of a large organization, a women's organization, and they are strategically asking our chapters to act accordingly just based on what has taken place. So this has escalated to a much, much higher level. I want to acknowledge that Mona Lisa Smith is with us. Thank you so much, Mona Lisa. I'll bring you in the conversation in just a second or so. But Ed, I wanted to ask you, what from all, again, all your work, we're talking to Ed Primo, and he is an audio and video forensic expert. We have known each other through the National Speakers Association for 15-plus years. He is now being requested on MSNBC, CNN, and lots of other stations because of the Trayvon Martin case. What is your assessment in terms of the element of race, and how has race impacted this entire case, Ed Primo?
Well, here's my opinion on that, Carol. I think what's happening is that we have still in this country an issue in some people's minds about the color of our skin and our ability to live among each other and cooperate in harmony. Even though Mr. Zimmerman is a man of color, and even though Trayvon Martin is a man of color, there still has been some distortions as to this being a racially motivated incident. And I can see why. I can see different pieces of information as to why people would do that. And then I guess the final part of my answer, Carol, is if somebody is racially motivated and is still has issues about race,
mm-hmm.
something like this is going to ruffle their feathers and get their adrenaline pumping more than somebody like you and I, perhaps, who are much more in tune to diversity and living in a diverse country.
Well, I think it also proves that we are all impacted by race, regardless of your ethnicity. And, I mean, technically, somebody who is Hispanic, that is not a race. It's a culture, and you can be white Hispanic or non-white Hispanic. That's another radio program. But the impact and the conditioning that we all are subjected to, certainly here in the United States, has, in many cases, a negative impact on African Americans, and in particular, African American males. Ed Primo, I know you've got to dash off. You've got lots of things to do. I want to thank you so much for being a guest on my program. How can people get in touch with you in terms of your website?
The main forensic website with audio investigation is audioforensicexpert.com.
Great. Ed Primo, thank you so much for being my guest.
Thank you, Carol.
All right, take care, and good luck with all the important work you're doing.
Thank you very much.
All right, take care. We're going to bring on now a woman I've known for many years, an executive, a banker. She has done an extremely wonderful job here in the greater Boston area. And then, sadly, her family was impacted by gun violence. Her nephew, 18 years old in 2010, was killed, and that mobilized her to start to co-found and become now the president of Mothers for Justice and Equality while she is keeping her day job as vice president at Citizens Bank. Mona Lisa Smith, thank you so much for being a guest on my program.
Carol, thank you so much for inviting me. I appreciate this opportunity.
Walk us back and tell us about your nephew. And I know you wrote a riveting, powerful piece that now is on your website, mothersforjusticeandequality.org, that sort of ties in the work that you're doing here in Boston with the Trayvon Martin case. So tell us first about your nephew.
My nephew, he was 18 years old when he was murdered on the streets of Boston. And he was my nephew, and he was a son to my niece. It was her only son, only child, and so his murder sort of just devastated us all, and it just kind of woke us up. I've always been a community advocate, and
right.
always have been frustrated by the alarming number of murders of our children in the city and across this nation. But when its impact, when you feel it in your family and it's that close, you know, your reality transforms into your destiny. And so that was really my call, my time where I felt like I needed to influence change. And change needed to come from those like myself, who were being impacted by this violence, that we could collectively think about solutions on how we can solve this problem.
And so instead of crying and comforting your sister and your other family members, you sprung into action and started a movement now called
mm-hmm.
Mothers for Justice and Equality. Tell us about that organization that you are doing part-time. I mean, you're still working your job as an executive, a vice president at one of the leading banks here in the city, and then running this organization too.
Mothers for Justice and Equality, we are a grassroots organization focused on civic leadership. Our mission is to empower ourselves, other mothers, community members, so that we become change agents in our community, that we become the solution to the problem. Our vision is a world where it's not normal for children to be murdered. We convene empowerment breakfasts, and our goal is to be informed of issues that are happening in our community, be motivated that we could change this, that we have the power to change this, and educate ourselves on how. You know, we believe there's one thing to say you're an organizer, that you're an advocate, but you need to be educated on how to do that. You need to know what are the issues and how can we impact and change the issues. You know, one of the things that we think about often with Trayvon Martin is, you know, not just the conversation that we need to have with our sons and daughters about, you know, the whole racial profiling, but also about the legislation. You know,
mm-hmm.
that we are not going to be always reactive, that we want to be proactive,
right.
that we want to stop it before it comes and not react to it when it takes a life from us. So, you know, this is what Mothers for Justice and Equality is all about. It's taking, you know, back our communities, you know, being a force, being a voice, and giving voice to others. We've had a number of terrific speakers come out and really begin to talk to us, but it's really about change, and change beginning with us and understanding that we are the people and we do have the power.
Well, I mean, you are a perfect guest to have on. We had Ed earlier in terms of giving the audio documentation about why George Zimmerman needs to be arrested, but then also looking at the complication of that, and there is a law in Florida, the Stand Your Ground law, which, by the way, is heading into your state, wherever you're listening from right now. It is going to make its way into Massachusetts, I believe, on April 27th, and we're praying, and we're going to advocate that it's going to be voted down in our state legislature. So you have a law in Florida that is literally allowing, I think, this is my opinion, a guilty person to walk the streets because the law is supporting his claim that he shot in self-defense. And what you're saying with Mothers for Justice and Equality is that your organization is not only an advocacy organization, but, again, teaching people how laws need to be positioned and passed throughout the United States so that we can prevent so much of this awful violence that's taking place. What is the racial component as we look at the Trayvon Martin case? And I must say, I mean, I'm drawn to this because I also lost, and you know, Mona Lisa, I lost my 17-year-old son, not to gun violence, to a car accident in 1997, but the pain is the same. To have a young person whose life is literally snuffed out, not to be lived ever again on this earth, and the parents and the sisters and the brothers and the cousins and all the family members and friends who are left behind wondering why. And on top of that, in this instance and in the instance of so many young black men, you've got the element of race. Talk to us quickly about that.
Race is prevalent, unfortunately, in our communities. You know, our children face a double threat. You know, they face the threat in their community where they would, you know, actually be targeted by, you know, by another, you know, person who looks just like them. And
right.
then they face the threat outside of their community where if they wander into an affluent community that they may be, you know, racially profiled. You know, we as mothers, fathers, we caregivers, we have to begin to have this conversation with our kids so that we teach them how are you going to act when you get in that situation. You know, whether you are in a situation where you were pulled over by the police, you know, what do you need to do so that they are not confused and they make the wrong move and it costs them their life.
Right, and I know middle class, I know upper class, I know working class black fathers, and you know them too, Mona Lisa,
mm-hmm.
who are literally instructing their sons on how to behave when they are stopped by the police or if they get into a situation like this one,
right.
how to behave. And they are doing it for their own safety and protection. And that is, again, the life that we're living in and the world that we're living in and why we still have a race problem in the United States.
That's right, Carol. And one of the op-eds that we wrote, Mother's Just Equality, was The Fierce Urgency of Now. And the article begins, and it says, we have a dream. We have a dream that our children would live in a world where they will not fall victim to violence because of the color of their skin.
Right.
You know, that's our dream. And we have to face the reality that our kids could fall victim to violence because of the color of their skin.
That's
you know,
right.
This is the fierce urgency of now, you know, that we have to deal with. And after writing that op-ed, we got calls from mothers who are white, and they have said, you know, I didn't know. You know, they said, Mona Lisa, I just didn't know that this is what you had to do. And I feel bad because I have a 19-year-old white son. And I didn't have to tell him that. We
right.
got mother calls from mothers that said, thank you, because me and my husband are getting ready to have this conversation with our son, who is biracial, and this is going to help us to have that conversation. Many people didn't realize that we have to help our children to survive in a world that no matter if they are doing well in school or whatever, they have to understand that you could fall victim, similar to Trayvon Martin, to violence. And what we're seeing now is a lot of young people that are starting to really kind of, you know, internalize fear
yes.
and say, okay, that could be me.
Yes, and not only that I mean,
me.
Young women, you know, who are fearful when they get pregnant, will they have a son, and will their son go through this experience? So, I mean, it's just the amount of pain and the complications that we see played out with this particular case is just extraordinary. Mona Lisa Smith, I want to thank you so much for being a guest on my program. I'm actually speaking later on this month for your organization. I look forward to it. We will definitely have to stay in touch and talk about this issue and these important issues that are impacting young men in particular, young black men in particular, throughout the United States. I want to thank you so much for being my guest on my program. program. Her radio program, her website is www.mothersforjusticeandequality.org. Thank you so much for listening to this edition of Focus on Empowerment. We hope that you'll go and have a blessed Easter. Thank you. Enjoy your week or weekend.